Alright, I thought we'd read one verse from Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, text 11, especially in response to devotees discussing the various world events and the tragic loss of life that's occurred and things like that. Generally, wherever you go, even in temples, the past month, everyone is talking about, you know, the World Trade Centers, why, and what does it mean, and how should devotees respond. And, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Ashochan Anvashocha Stung, Pragyavarams Chabashase, Gatasun Agatasumscha Nanu Shochanti Pandita. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Asochan, not worthy of lamentation. Anvashocha, you are lamenting. Twam, you. Pragyavaran, learned talks. Cha, also. Bhashase, speaking. Gata, lost. Asun, life. Agata, not past. Asun, life. Cha, also. Na, never. Anushochanti, lament. Pandita, the learned. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Purport. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, you are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme is even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there's no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the body. You can repeat the translation after me. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So, how does this sound to you? It's very cold and a hard position that Krishna has taken here. Arjuna is feeling compassionate, no doubt about it. What's the first verse of the second chapter say? Tang tata kripaya vishtam ashru purna kulekshanam vishidantam idam vakyam uvacha madhusudana. Sanjaya said, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, his mind depressed, his eyes full of tears, Madhusudana, Krishna spoke the following words. So there's no doubt that Arjuna had compassion. There's no doubt that he had the great qualities of sympathy and empathy. There's no doubt about that. You're not dealing with some kind of one-dimensional person in Arjuna. You're dealing with a rounded, mature, well-developed human being, at least. A human being far above the quality or the caliber that you have today. This is Arjuna. And in one sense, he's showing ideal qualities. There's no doubt about it in his feeling sad for this battle having to take place. He's showing the soft-heartedness of a devotee. But what is the problem here? No one is denying that Arjuna's feeling compassion. No one is denying that he has sensitivity and empathy. But why is Krishna chastising him? You're speaking learned words, but you're mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. This sounds a bit cold. What do you think? Anyone?
This seems much lamenting for the living. I'm just wondering what way is Krishna saying don't lament for the living?
Krishna is basically saying, as Prabhupada explains in Purport, don't lament or become jubilant about the material body in any stage, because you're not the material body. But if you miss this basic lesson of Bhagavad Gita, then you'll, from the material platform, you'll criticize Krishna. I mean, Arjuna was really being a fine person, full of empathy and compassion, and Krishna just shut him down. Why is this? Any other comments? Why would you say it's false compassion? Yes, but someone would argue, what's wrong with feeling compassion about the temporary material world?
Because real compassion is eternal compassion, going beyond.
Yes, you can certainly say like that. This point about compassion is explained by Prabhupada in the first purport of the chapter. Material compassion, lamentation, and tears are all signs of ignorance of the real self. Compassion for the eternal soul is self-realization. Later he says, no one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nations cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. One who does not know this and laments for the outward dress is called a Shudra, or one who laments unnecessarily. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, and this conduct was not expected from him. Lord Krishna, however, can dissipate the lamentation of the ignorant man, and for this purpose the Bhagavad Gita was sung by him. So, you have to kind of balance two things here. On the one hand, Arjuna is feeling compassion. And it's not rejected by Krishna in that it's not that the Lord is saying, don't be compassionate. But the Lord is chastising him for putting his priorities in the wrong place, for not applying his compassion properly. So this is what Bhagavad Gita is about. It is not a cold and heartless book. It is a book for focusing what you have in the best way. Now, unless you understand the spiritual platform, how can you understand what is the best way? So, compared to the reality of the spiritual world, the affairs of the material world are insignificant. But when people know nothing about the spiritual reality, they take this material to be all in all, and they get very worked up in terms of lamentation and jubilation. And they'll even feel sometimes offended if you don't participate with them in the process of material lamentation and jubilation. So what Krishna is asking for out of Arjuna is apply your compassion properly. Not that don't be compassionate, don't have feelings for the people. Many persons misread Bhagavad Gita in this way because the war scene intimidates them so much. But Krishna knows how to do his job. He's picked the most provocative circumstance to make you think. That's why he's speaking Bhagavad Gita, the message of love in between two armies. The whole thing is packaged in such a way that unfaithful persons have a very hard time understanding Bhagavad Gita, although it's spoken so simply in clear Sanskrit. The provocation is too much. Why is God on a battlefield? Why is God causing wars? It's very intimidating. It's amazing how Prabhupada preached Bhagavad Gita during the Vietnam War, when so many young people were disturbed about the possibility of their being sent to the jungles of Vietnam to die. Not only in USA, Australia also, they were, you know, people were going to Vietnam, and so the young people were upset. I mean, let's see, do we have anybody here who's 19, over 18? At age 18, no, I mean, not over 18, but 18, 19 or so, 20. Anyone? Yes. What would you think? You're 20 now? At any moment, you, at this young age of 20, your whole life is waiting for you. You could be sent to the jungles to die. So that's the atmosphere that Prabhupada preached Bhagavad Gita in. And he didn't back down. Again and again he would explain why what Krishna did in Bhagavad Gita is perfect, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is perfect. And often young people would get angry. How can you preach this war book during a time like this? But Prabhupada would patiently explain again and again how whatever Krishna does is perfect, even if he's on a battlefield. It is provocative. Krishna knows how to do things to make you think. If you don't think, you'll just reject it out of hand. Oh, Bhagavad Gita, it's just too heavy. This battle scene, this killing of one's own relatives. You see how Krishna's packaged it? He's packaged it in such a way that the non-devotees will not want to take interest. When Krishna dances the Rasa dance, oh, then everyone, oh, yes, yes, very interesting. This is where we're at, yes. But if Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, no one's interested. But we say that the Rasa dance, understanding it, that is for mature devotees, and Bhagavad Gita is for everyone. But the non-devotees think the opposite. Oh, the Rasa dance. Yes, that's where we're at. Krishna, the Hindu love god. How many times have you come across people when you start talking about India or the Vedas, they say, oh yes, the Kama Sutra. That's what they click on, you know? They don't understand the whole Vedic panorama. Even if you want to consider the Kama Sutra, you know, some kind of remotely connected to the Vedic tradition, that's really stretching it. There's no doubt, it's meant for Shudras. It's meant for Shudras. People, persons in the mode of ignorance. What person, properly civilized, not even a transcendentalist, but a person in the mode of goodness, how would such a person be attracted to such a title? Kama Sutra, the sutra about lust. Just the title itself, you know. Makes you think, this is everything I want to get away from. But so many people glorify that today. Oh, yeah. Oh, India, the Vedas, oh, Kama Sutra, yeah. Does that happen to anyone here? Yeah, it's amazing. So, we cannot understand Krishna's vision without understanding the spiritual world. Krishna is minimizing compassion for the material world because there is the spiritual world. And Krishna is trying to get us to see that, okay, it's all right you want to be compassionate about something, but let's find the real thing to be compassionate about. But it's hard for us because we identify with the body and take the body to be the main thing. Therefore, it's difficult when someone just says, oh, put that aside, you know, it's not such a big thing. Whether your body is living or dead, it's not a big thing. Would you like someone saying to you, whether your body is living or not, it's not a big thing? Wait a minute. I'm a young man. I got a future for my senses, you know, things I want to experience and feel and do before I'm an old man. But basically, what is Krishna saying here? Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Now, in ignorance, you'd think, well, Krishna's rejecting everybody here. He's saying, you know, don't worry about the people who are dead. Don't worry about the people who are living. Well, then who do you worry about? It seems like he's just dismissed everybody. But you have to understand the standpoint that Krishna is speaking from. He's speaking from the fully spiritual standpoint, in that the material body is temporary and it's not worth lamenting for in any stage, whether it's dead or alive. Because whether the body is dead or alive, you're not the body. It's really hard to switch our priorities to get this fully in focus. Why is Krishna so heavy with Arjuna? It's not that Krishna doesn't want Arjuna to feel and have empathy and sympathy, but Krishna wants Arjuna to focus those qualities in the right direction. Therefore, in this second chapter, the Lord goes on to explain all about the spirit soul. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport, compassion for the spirit soul is self-realization. All right, you want to be compassionate? Let's be compassionate about the important things. Now, if you get a rip in your clothes, you're going to be concerned. It's like I have one piece of cloth and a little hole is starting to develop. So I'm a little concerned because if the hole expands, then, you know, the whole cloth is finished. So it's not like I'm not concerned. But when seen in perspective, it's not the worst thing that could happen. Now, it's from this standpoint that Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita. This is hard for us to understand because of the bodily concept of life. When we understand there's something more significant than the body, then what Krishna is saying clicks. But if we can't understand chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, it's very difficult to understand the rest of the book. Therefore, Prabhupada gave us so many lectures about how we're not the body. Now, this is not heavy preaching. It's reality. You have to adjust your priorities. You've made a mistake in the beginning of your calculation, and therefore everything that comes after is mistaken. So it's not that Krishna is trying to turn Arjuna into a stone, a feelingless person with no empathy. No. He's trying to make him the best person with empathy and sympathy. That means the person who can see people's spiritual benefit. Sometimes devotees have trouble with this because they think that, well, if I just focus on people's spiritual benefit, wouldn't I be neglecting their bodies? I mean, even though they're not the body, still, you have to take care of the body. But how many of you have had cars before? Even ladies here have cars, yes? So, you're not the car, but did you automatically just trash out your car? No, you, especially, you know, the ladies, they may not care except for the upholstery and the, you know, and what color the rugs are on the floor in the car. But men generally are very careful about cars, right? You have a car? Yes. Who has a car here? Yes. That's just one of you, right? You're, you know, it's a car. You know, it's not me, but it should be taken care of nicely. If you hear a bad sound, you're concerned, right? But it's not the all of your life. Another example could be computers. That's the other male love. You know, generally you can't stand it when your computer, you know, it's just something's just not happening right. But still, you know, you're not the computer. We have to see things in perspective to understand Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, we'll think that, oh, this book is very heavy. It's very severe. One New Ager told me, this Bhagavad Gita is high on the list of dogma books. In other words, because Krishna is speaking so clearly and definitively, it's got to be wrong. If you make something fuzzy and make it vague, then, oh, that's spiritual knowledge. But Krishna is saying, it's like this, it's like this, it's like this. Oh, we have to reject it. Too authoritative. It's Krishna's ego tripping, grabbing the podium and, you know, just making his presentation. To appreciate Bhagavad Gita, which is the basic study book in Krishna consciousness, you have to understand that there is a spiritual reality which makes the material reality very insignificant. Because something is insignificant doesn't mean you just trash it. Still, you understand it's insignificant. So basically what Krishna is saying in this chapter is, okay, look, you want to be compassionate. You want to care for others. Well, I'll give you the real thing to care about. Why don't you care about their spiritual development? Now, it's not that Krishna neglects the body in Bhagavad Gita. He's talking about Varnashram Dharma, which is based on the body. Therefore, in this same chapter, he tells Arjuna, okay, so to speak, let's not talk spiritual, let's talk about material. Even on the material platform, considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, still you should fight. So all the reasons are given in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna even uses peer pressure on Arjuna. Don't think if you walk away from this battlefield that your friends will have a good opinion of you. No, they'll think very badly of you. And for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So Krishna's, you know, using all the avenues here. So you cannot say that Bhagavad Gita is ignoring the human psyche, it's ignoring our emotions and... No, Bhagavad Gita is a very emotional book. So much so that what does Sanjaya say at the end? Hearing this conversation, my hairs are standing on end. A thrill every moment. Let's read that verse. Now, if that doesn't sound emotional, I don't know what is. Sanjaya said, thus I have heard the conversation of two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna, and so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. How often have you read something that makes your hair stand on end? What else does Sanjaya say? O King, talking to Dhritarashtra, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. How many of you have experienced a thrill at every moment? This is Bhagavad Gita, when it's heard properly. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. This is Bhagavad Gita, when properly heard. So that isn't all that in what you just... These verses, aren't they emotional verses? Hair standing on end, struck with wonder, a thrill every moment. So that means the knowledge that Krishna is giving is leading to the real person, the fully developed person, the Krishna conscious person. Therefore, Krishna is minimizing material compassion because he's saying, in other words, okay, you want to worry, you want to have compassion, you want to care. Well, there's a better way to do it. Learned persons put all their caring efforts mainly in a different area. That's what he's saying. Therefore, he calls Arjuna a fool. Why are you caught up in the changes of the body? Whether the body is living or dead, it's not the person. That's the main thrust of what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. Then there are also other nuances, because Krishna will talk about Varnashram Dharma in the Gita, which is material in relation to the body. But that's not the main thrust. So you have to see the main focus of Bhagavad Gita and how everything hangs off of that main focus. So what do you think? How many of you have thought about this before? When you first read Bhagavad Gita, were you a little terrified? What did you think when you first read?
Well, definitely a little unsure.
I don't know if this is where I should be going, right? Some kind of fanaticism, right? War book?
Well, I wasn't so much worried about the war. I was just unsure what it all meant. So, obviously coming from the material platform, that was part of the problem. Mm.
Like what was particularly, do you remember what particularly troubled you? Something Krishna said, or the whole scene? Or?
Something similar like that verse, or lamenting for living of the dead, and not understanding that we should lament for the material body, and we should actually have compassion, as you said, for the spirit soul.
Just because we don't make it a policy of lamenting for the material body doesn't mean that we're callous to people's material suffering. It's just that we don't take that material suffering to be the most important thing. We have a perspective. Just like the example I gave. Yes, I have a hole in my cloth, so I am concerned about it, but it's not like it's not the everything to me. But people, they tend to take things either all or nothing. Oh, you mean you're just for the spirit soul. You're against the body, right? Many people think that about devotees. You're anti-body. You just try to follow the regular principles and people think, oh, you've rejected the body. They can't see the moderation. They can't see a balance. Because they're so eager to protect their sense gratification, they don't want any reduction in sense gratification. If you dare say reduce sense gratification, they immediately say, "Oh, you're against the body. You're throwing the whole body out. Very unhealthy." Now, all I said was reduce. Oh. So they always keep you on the defensive in this way. Unless you can see through this ruse, it's very difficult for you to preach. That's why it's important to learn Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, your intelligence will become overwhelmed. Anyone else? When you first read Bhagavad Gita? You were a little concerned? Yes? What were you thinking?
No, I wasn't concerned. I was just thought it was in awe of the way Krishna speaks. I thought it was garbage. There was so much there.
When you read Bhagavad Gita as it is. Yes. Because at first you were not understanding the difference between Krishna's personhood and our personhood. Yes. Who is this person saying, always think of me, do everything for me? Mm-hmm. I remember in my material life I had one companion, and I was trying to get her to be Krishna conscious, and I gave her a Krishna book. At the front of the Krishna book there was this page that said, Krishna is supreme enjoyer. So she just opened the book when I gave it to her, and first thing she saw was, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. That's our job. So, yes, we have resentment against Krishna that he speaks so unilaterally and so authoritatively in Bhagavad Gita. Doesn't leave us any room, Bhagavad Gita. Just because something is authoritative doesn't mean we should reject it. Just because it's authoritative. Let's see what's being said. So our Krishna conscious challenge is that we have the greatest and best information about God. We don't say we're the only ones with knowledge of God, but we say what Krishna is teaching is the greatest and the best in terms of comprehensiveness and depth. So rather than people just reject Bhagavad Gita saying, oh, it's one of those old-fashioned, ancient, authoritative scriptures, let us see what's there and compare. That's all we want, a fair chance. Give the Gita a fair chance. Give Krishna a fair go. Let's see what he's saying. And let's see what you're saying. That's all. So Prabhupada was preaching this Bhagavad Gita during the time when the young people were terrified of going to the Vietnam War. And sometimes there would be disturbances. In Australia, there were some disturbances in Melbourne. I think at Monash University, something like that. Disturbance. Anyone else? Ladies, you never got disturbed reading Bhagavad Gita at first? Of course, Daniel. What did you think? Oh, what am I getting into here? I don't want to, you know, go on some battlefield and, you know, kill my relatives. And is this what Krishna consciousness is about? That's what you were thinking, yeah? But why did you keep reading? Yes, it's amazing how, although Krishna speaks so incisively, at the same time he really arouses your curiosity. I know what I felt like when I was first reading Bhagavad Gita. I said, I've never met a person like this who just goes on and on speaking like he knows everything. I mean, you know, Krishna's got attitude. But at the same time, you can definitely see he knows what he's talking about. So that's what struck me. You know, this Krishna's got attitude. I mean, you know. He really thinks he's on top of everything, and then he actually shows that he is. I was Anyone else feel a little fearful when starting Bhagavad Gita? Or you all just read it and said yes? You felt a little fearful? Why? You're hoping for a different process which combines sense gratification and self-realization, huh? Well, there is sense gratification in Krishna consciousness. It's not that there's none. I mean, just, you know, look at a feast, everyone eats so nicely, you get your maha prasad. There's marriages. I mean, that's not all pure devotion. So, but it's legitimate sense gratification. That's the point. It's therapeutic sense gratification, in that by taking what Krishna allows you for your sense gratification, you can gradually give up the desire for sense gratification. But if you take more than what Krishna allows you, then you're not able to become detached. I don't think you can say there's no sense gratification in Krishna consciousness. The ladies, they dress nicely in saris, right? You don't have nice saris? You're going to India, you'll make up for it next week. You'll come back, you'll be the envy of the temple. We're in the latest, whatever, latest popular colors. I don't know anything about that. So and the men, you know. We can get on the temple computer. Or you have your own now. Oh, okay. So there's traveling. I mean, no. How many persons travel the way devotees travel? That's just amazing. The average person cannot think of traveling as much as devotees travel. Even householders. I mean, what, you go to India, what, every 2 years? Or are you still in your... Yeah, I mean, where do you find a mother and daughter and a husband going to India, you know, every year, every 2 years? I mean, it's just unheard of, isn't it? In the so-called normal world, isn't that unheard of? Right? I mean, people at... Yeah, at best they're thinking, you know, maybe this year I'll get down the south, was it Denmark down there, down the bottom of south west Australia. Yeah, maybe I'll get down there this year. Or maybe I'll get up to Darwin or something. Or maybe I'll go to, you know, my dream trip, you know. Maybe I'll get to London. Of course it's no big deal for them to go to Singapore. That's from here. That's no big deal. But still, an overseas trip is going to, you know, wow. It's like on this itinerary that Dave and Adrian and myself are on. Every time I have to talk with a reservations lady or something about the tickets, it's always, wow, look at all the places you're going. It's really great, huh? Amazing. Look at the size of that ticket. Oh, good on you. You know, for me, you know, another day, another airport, you know, it's a big deal, you know. Another chance to get jet lag and get cramped legs and breathe stale air. So, in that way, you can see our Krishna conscious life is full of many things that a person would consider sense gratification. Of course, we're doing it all for Krishna, right? We should do everything for Krishna. But there's opportunity in Krishna consciousness to gradually increase the quality of your dedicating your actions to Krishna. It's not all or nothing. We should be making gradual progress to the point of doing everything simply for Krishna's sense gratification. Anyone else have their experiences of reading Bhagavad Gita? So tomorrow, in Bhagavatam class we can discuss more about this topic. It's very interesting. How should we feel when there are great disasters in the world? How should devotees respond? Of course, responses will vary, especially according to your ashram. Grihasthas are a very social ashram. You know, and so, you know, relatives and, you know, they're in the world more. You know, you have a wife, they're babies, and then you have to deal with, your material relations because they all want to take an interest, you know, and generally. And then you have to work. Most grihasthas have to work, so that also puts you within the world. So generally, grihasthas are a bit more prone to take on influences from the material world. It's the nature of the ashram. And, of course, the brahmacharis and sannyasis, generally, if they're properly trained, will be more, there'll be less fuzziness in understanding. But actually, proper understanding should be there for all the ashrams. Still, we have to allow for various relativities, because this is a fact. Grihastha life causes you to be a certain way. Sannyas life causes you to have a certain vision. But let us look at what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita and agree that that is our vision. And according to our own relative situation, we'll apply it a little differently, but at least we should agree that this is the vision we're holding on to. So it's a challenging theme. Please think about it. Krishna tells Arjuna, you're talking all this about compassion and caring, but I say you're just speaking big words. But you really don't know what you're talking about. Because someone who's actually learned won't talk in that way. They won't be concerned so much with these things. They have other concerns. Now, Vaishnavas do lament. Prahlad Maharaj, he expresses his lamentation in the seventh canto. Well, how does that verse start? Shoche tatova mukacheta sa indriyata maya sakaya bharam udvahatova mudan nai vodvije puradarapjaya vaitalanyas tadvirya. Anyone know? Tadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta shoche tato. Prahlad Maharaj says, therefore, I'm lamenting. So for me, I don't have any problems. I'm always in the Mahamrita, the great ocean of nectar, hearing and chanting. But I'm lamenting for the others who are not absorbed in Krishna consciousness. What will happen to them? They're carrying the false imaginary burden of material life. Maya sukaya baram udvahato vimudan. Therefore, they're special fools, super fools, vimuda. There's ordinary fool, mudha. And then there's Vimudha, the special fool, the empowered fool. You've made the all-star team for the fools. Vimudha. Maya sakaya baram udvahato vimudan. So Prahlad says, I'm lamenting. So there you have it. So I'll tell you about my own lamentation just to end this class. On the airplanes, they have these movies, and if the screen is right in front of you, you can generally, I'm doing something else, so I can generally blot it all out. But naturally, every once in a while, your eyes looking up, and you, oh my God, what is this? So if you're flying all the time, even without looking at the screen, you just, out of the corner of your eye, you get a understanding of, what's going on in people's consciousness these days, because this is the stuff they all watch. So quite often, there are movies about teenage romance, and especially geared for the teenage girls, but made in such a way that the adults will also like it. And, it's about high school boy and girl, and they're completely having a illicit affair. And you wonder, how how, you know, what can become of the youth? Seeing these things, their brains are just going to broil. I have tears are coming out of my eyes just thinking of it. Like, what? This is destroying people's chances for self-realization. And at the end, the girl got the guy she wanted. She seduced him, and got the guy she wanted. And he was a good guy. He was going to Annapolis, the Naval Academy in the USA, and now he was her man. And so, it ended like that. And she was giving a little monologue at the end. There are millions of people in the world, but there's just one, that one for you. And as long as he accepts your imperfections, it doesn't matter what happens. You better find someone who accepts your imperfections. That's the one for you. And the father was patting the guy on the back. Yes, I see you've done wonderful for my daughter. I'm glad that you didn't heed my warnings and stay away from her. They've been shacking up. They've been doing all these. But anyways, you're the best thing to ever happen to my daughter. And you're going to the Naval Academy to become an officer. And great, it's the best, I'm sure you'll do great. And thank you for helping my daughter. And so what do you think people are going to think looking at this? Hey, you're a young person, you've got no hope. This is where it's at, right? You thought like this, Donna? See? Yes, of course. Oh, wow, that's what life's all about. You know, when you're just 12 years old, you think, hey, I'm going to go for it, right? Of course. And with the adult's encouragement, too. Father was patting the guy on the back. Yeah. Good on you, thank you for... being for real with my daughter. So this just brings the standard of everyone's consciousness down and is accepted as normal. So I was lamenting, what chance do people have for understanding Krishna in this kind of atmosphere? There's no chance. Therefore, I can understand what Prabhupada talks about in Bhagavad Gita. The killers of the soul go lower than the people who engage in sense gratification. Those who organize a society for sense gratification go lower in terms of karmic effect in their next life. They go lower than just an ignorant person who's engaging in sense gratification. So I was lamenting. I was even surprised. Tears are coming out of the corner of my eyes. Like, what in the world? How can anybody be Krishna conscious with this kind of junk going on? So devotees do lament. Now, it's not that we are callous to people's bodily suffering, but we just know there are more important and more there are more important things that we should become riled up about and concerned about. That's all. But people mistake that prioritization for lack of concern because they don't understand the spiritual platform. All right. We'll talk more tomorrow morning. Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada.